Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Troubleshooting WebSphere Process Server Runtime Problems. Today's presenter is Yoko Hakuna. Yoko is an instructor and curriculum developer for WebSphere Education and a certified Level 2 IT specialist. Her most recent role is to teach and develop advanced WebSphere Process Server courses, one of which is WebSphere Process Server Problem Determination. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Yoko.
Thank you, Joseph, and good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, depending on where you are. My name is Yoko Hakuna, as Joseph introduced me. I am still part of WebSphere Education today, but I'm actually in transition to consulting team. So as of Thursday, I will be part of the IBM consultant. So I might be working with you in the future as IBM consultant. Since we don't have that much time, so let's get started. And Joseph, could you please go to the next slide? Thank you. So today's agenda is, first of all, before jump into the detailed information about how to troubleshoot WebSphere Process Server issues, I want to give you a quick introduction to problem determination steps. Then we're going to go ahead and talk about SCA exceptions and how they relate to the creation of failed events. And then we're going to talk about SCA problem determination tools that are come embedded as a part of WebSphere Process Server and WebSphere Integration Developer. Then we're going to talk about cross-component trace. This is one of the features that I use heavily in terms when I troubleshoot a problem myself. And then we're going to talk about guided troubleshooter in IBM Support Assistant, ISA. And I just want to give you a quick introduction of ISA and guided troubleshooter. So to give you a little bit of warning, there's so much. If you allow me, I could spend hours and hours and days to talk about problem determination. But since we don't have much time, I just trying to pick out maybe 30-some slides worth of information for you. I might go through some of the slides very quickly, but that's only because I added the slide thinking that even if I don't spend much time on it, you might still find beneficial to have the information on your hand. Okay. So let's get started, and please go to slide number 3. In this topic, I want to focus on the problems that occurred during the runtime. So I'm not going to talk about design issues or how to troubleshoot something that you may encounter during the development of SCA. I want to focus on the runtime issues. The typical problem symptoms that you may encounter is the system is not responding, or application failed to start, or application started but it's not responding to the incoming request, or maybe it is responded to the incoming request but issue an exception, or your application is supposed to invoke external service but the connection somehow does not occur. And the worst problems, no, I shouldn't say worst, but one of the tedious problems that you may encounter at runtime is the last one on the bullet, an application performance degrades over time. This is the trickiest problems that you may encounter because this, most of the time, when the performance degrades over time, the problems go on undetected for a long time until it finally leads to more bigger problems and trigger hang thread issues or something, and then finally you realize that there is a runtime issue. So those are the problem symptoms that you may have seen and you might have dealt with, and those are the issues that we are trying to tackle. And please go to slide 4. Before, if you are more like me, I would like to have a specific steps to follow. So this slide talks about key steps for problem determination to minimize your problem determination effort. So when does problem determination happen? The answer is the problem determination should have happened yesterday. But really, the first key step is really the problem prevention. Make sure that your environment is tuned properly. So when you encounter a problem, you can just assume that your process server environment has been properly tuned, so you can just focus on your effort into troubleshooting the actual problem instead of trying to tune the threat counts and so on. The second step is to organize the investigation. So organize the thoughts not only to describe the problem to your teammates, but also so that you can organize your investigation and you know what would be the next step you have to perform. The third step is before jumping into looking into system log, make sure to consider relief options. Remember, your service is and the service you're providing, there is always a client that is depending on your service. Meaning if your application fails, there is a client application that is pending on your service. So consider relief options. So first three steps, try to have this some sort of steps organized in your organization. So first step is tune the environment, describe the investigation, and trying to think of relief option ahead of time. And then finally you go into initial investigation. Before jump into looking into the log file, try to go into knowledge base and take notes and see if there are updates and fixes, because the problem might be already known issues and then IBM might have posted a workaround or fix back for it. Have you ever had an issue? I have done it before myself, that spent hours in trying to look into the log file, try a few things, trying to fix the problem. Finally, I couldn't figure it out, so I opened the PMR, only so that support guys could come back to me and tell me, oh, this is a known issue, there's a fix back, please follow this link and apply the fix. So to minimize your effort, before jumping to looking into the issues, trying to look into knowledge base and take notes. If that still doesn't solve the issue, if your problem is unique, then you have to perform execution of troubleshooting actions. And you have to isolate the problem and run some component testing. If that still doesn't solve the issue, then you have to consider contacting IBM support. So in this talk, I'm going to focus on this last phase, execution of troubleshooting actions. Please go to slide number 5. Here's a quick troubleshooting checklist for process server. First, is the configuration supported? Second, have you applied the latest fix? Number 3 is, what is the problem? Is it installation issues or migration? Or maybe deployment of the application is taking hours and hours while it should be only 5 minutes or so. Or maybe the issue is dealing with the administration applications. Maybe you cannot launch the business space, for instance. Or maybe the problem might not be really the WebSphere process server, but it might be the core features that provided by the WAS, WebSphere application server. Okay, for instance, if you have class loader issues, you are getting exceptions such as class guest exceptions, class not found exceptions, then that's really something to do with the class loader. It's not really something that WebSphere process server provides. WebSphere process server inherit that part, the technology from WAS. So that's really something that you have to troubleshoot using the WAS troubleshooting techniques. And then finally, have any error message being generated. So when you look at this checklist, it seems obvious to you. You might say, oh, that's simple. But remember, when you're troubleshooting, that means some sort of failure happened. When you're at the heat of the moment, you are really going through that little bit of panicking phase. So it's nice to have quick checklists so that you can organize your thought and you know what would be the next action to take. Please go to slide number 6. So let's talk about exception types that are provided by SVA programming model. There are two types. One is service business exceptions, and another one is service runtime exceptions. Service business exceptions is something that's not supposed to be a normal operation, but because of the nature of your business logic, it could happen from time to time. The example of business exception is that, for instance, if you have a web service that will go check the stock price based on the stock symbol that customer provides, human error could happen, right? I'm good at making a typo. So human error could happen. If customer meant to enter IBM, but the customer enter IMB instead, then that shouldn't really crash your web service. It should really throw invalid symbol exceptions and ask customer to maybe re-enter a valid symbol. So service business exceptions is something that you define as a service provider. As a service requester, you would know how to react to that, okay? If invalid symbol exceptions happen, as a service client, I might say, oh, there was a typo. Let me enter the correct symbol and resubmit, right? Service runtime exceptions, on the other hand, this is something to do with system-level exceptions that is totally unexpected, such as null-pointer exceptions or maybe Java out-of-memory exception. Could you please go to slide number 7? So let's look at a little bit more about service business exceptions. When you define service business exception, you really need to define that in your WSDL interface. So the screen capture here that you can see on this slide is this WSDL defines the operation name, customer type, which has a signature of input message, output message, and if you are throwing a business exception, and you have to define that as a part of fault message. So as a service provider, this is you, your responsibility to define the fault in your WSDL interface. As a service requester, when I look at this WSDL, I know that fault message could be returned to me, so my client application should have fault handler to handle it. So because of that, this is more specific to individual service business logic that you're providing. Unit of work, the transaction, is not set for rollback. Right? Go to slide number 8. On the other hand, service runtime exception is something that's out of your control. In this case, this will result in the rollback of the current unit of work. So service runtime exception will end up marking the current unit of work to be rollback. And generally, this results in creation of a failed event when the client uses a synchronous invocation pattern. So again, to summarize, service business exception will not result in rollback. Service runtime exception will be result in rollback, and it creates fail events. Slide number 9, please. So I'm going to go through pretty quickly on this particular slide. This is just for your information. Service runtime exception has several subclasses: service expiration runtime exception, service timeout runtime exception, service unavailable exception, and service unwire reference runtime exception. I'm sure some of you have seen one or two of those exceptions, or most of them. I certainly have seen most of those exceptions before in my career. So service expiration runtime exception is where you place the asynchronous request message, but the target application has not, if the target hasn't picked up the request after so many seconds, then it'll throw service expiration runtime exceptions. By default, there is no request expiration set, but if your business logic requires that the request message should be picked up by the target application within maybe 30 seconds or within 2 minutes, then you want to set that using the request expiration qualifier on the service reference. Service timeout runtime exception is the asynchronous request was picked up, but after so much time, if you still haven't received the response back, then service timeout runtime exception might be thrown. Again, the duration of how long you want to wait for the response can be set using the response expiration qualifier on a service reference. Service unavailable exceptions, as it says, you fail to invoke the external service. Service unwire reference runtime exceptions, the reference wiring hasn't been set correctly. Go to slide number 10. So I'm not going to spend much time on this particular slide, but I wanted to give you a quick table so that you will know when a sale event gets created, when it does not. So as I mentioned, service business exception is something that you should handle as a part of business logic. So you will see fail events to be created if you're dealing with service runtime exception and the invocation pattern that was used was asynchronous. It makes sense, right? Because synchronous invocation, it's really you keep the control over it. You send the request. You wait for the response to come back. So you are maintaining the control. So if exception happens, you know. But asynchronous, you don't have that control over it. So you definitely need the runtime process server to handle that exceptions to capture it. Go to slide number 11. So as you can see, the process server's runtime crash recovery mechanism will capture and create fail events for all asynchronous invocation patterns that are supported by SCA programming model, asynchronous one-way, asynchronous deferred response, and asynchronous callback, and also BBL one-way. And remember, long-running business processes are asynchronous by its nature. And we'll talk a little bit more on this. And go to slide number 12. Just for your information, if you wonder where this failed message or failed invocation data will go, so system exception destination can be found on the SI bus. When you go to the admin console, expand service integration, and there's a buses, right? And click on it. When you installed SCA application, when you deploy the SCA application onto the server, it will automatically generate destination for each module. The naming convention for that is very straightforward, so you will know even though you didn't create the destination. The destination is called SCA / the module name. So it will be easy for you to find the destination. And if you go into specific module destination, there is an exception destination properties, and you will know which cue point destination that fail event message will go. And there's a property called maximum failed deliveries per message. By default, this value is set to 5. What it means is that in case of runtime exception, system runtime exceptions, the process server runtime recovery system will try to retry the message for 5 times before persist the data into the fail event database. Go to slide number 13. So I know I'm personally a more visual person, so I like to look at the diagram. So we're going to look at a couple slides to see how everything goes. So in this example, I have an SCA module, very simple one. I have a BPO component. It happened to be a long-running business process. And I exposed this service component using export components with JMS binding. As a part of the Beetle logic, I invoke external service through the import. The binding, again, is set to JMS binding. And also there's another component defined in the module, and as a part of Beetle logic, I invoke that. If you can see, the JMS export and import, if any binding error happens, that failed event will go into SCA application exception queue. However, for rest of it, for if any infrastructure failure, runtime exceptions between Beetle component to component, those go to the system, SCA system exception queue, which we looked at in the previous clean capture of the admin console. An interesting part of it is that Beetle has its own internal recovery mechanism. So for Beetle, it has its own business flow manager internal queues. So to give you a quick overview, business flow manager is responsible for navigating data from activity, Beetle activity to activity. So in order to make sure the message navigates through activity to activity, business flow manager has internal queue. If failure happens, delivery message from, for instance, receive activity to assign activity, for instance, then the message goes into business flow manager retention queue. And eventually it moves to business flow manager hold queue. So, and in the end, the message will get stored into either BB database for Beetle or fail event repository for other SCA runtime exceptions. And you use fail event manager to manage that exceptions. Please go to slide number 14. So this will show you how everything happens. So as I mentioned before, if there's a service runtime exception happen, that message will go to the fail event destination. Then, so we have dedicated recovery MDV. The recovery MDV will be listening to the failed event destination and trying to redeliver that message for 5 times. Again, you can go to admin console and change that maximum failed delivery count to, 3, or maybe increase it to 7. Okay, but by default it's 5 times. If it's still, MDV still fails to deliver the message and that failed event get stored into failed event database. And go to fail event manager, you will deal with the fail events. Go to slide number 15. So here's a screen capture of failed event manager. When fail event was stored into the fail event database, you can go to fail event manager. From there, you can click on resubmit button to resubmit the data. Or you might look at the data and say, oh, I know why it failed because I didn't provide certain field property value. Then you can click on the edit business data and you can fix the data and then come back and resubmit. Go to slide number 16. Here's a screen capture of service integration bus browser. Here, using this, You can see the queue depth. And remember, I mentioned about any SCA infrastructure failure, the message goes into the destination in the system bus. So if you expand the buses on the left-hand pane, you see the system SCA.system.qcell.bus. So when I said system bus, I was talking about this. If you remember, I mentioned about for any binding error with JMS binding, then you can find the destination on the application bus. So the next bus you see in the screen capture is sca.application.qcell.bus. So I was talking about this bus. Okay. So this is just for your information. If you want to see where the message seems to be hanging, in the admin console, you can go to the service integration bus browser to look at the queue depth. But again, this is not where you're going to try to resubmit the fail events. This is nothing to do with fail events. It just tells you where the messages are. Go to the next slide. And so in case you don't know why the events fail, but you are willing to resubmit it, you might say, well, you know, I know the event probably failed again because I don't know what happened. You might choose to enable additional trace and then go back to Fail Event Manager in resubmit. That way, the fail event might fail again, but at least you have additional trace information, right? So in that case, go to the troubleshooting in the admin console and go to logging and tracing and change the log detail level. You can, as you can see in a screen capture, you can add SCA.core for something like this. Remember, in this screen capture, I set this additional trace on the configuration tab. This means that this tracing will not take effect until the next time you restart the server. If you want to start tracing right away, then you have to click on the runtime tab instead and add the additional trace. That way, the tracing will take effect immediately. And then you might go back to the fail event manager and resubmit the failed event. Go to slide number 18. So now you have additional trace information. And those additional tracing information, you can find it in the system outlog and trace log. Here I have the header of the system outlog. The header is basically the very beginning first entry in your log file. This will give you important information about your server version, the cell name, node name, and server name along with the process ID. And also it gives you the class path and Java library path. As you can see in this screen capture, you can see Java home, class path, Java library path. You may not look at this unless you are having issues with maybe class loader. If you are dealing with class not found exceptions, then you might want to look at this class path and Java library path. Go to slide number 19. And then stack trace. This is the portion of the log file that gives you all the information about the origin of the failure. And I'm sure you have seen those things. Stack trace seems to repeat over itself over and over. It could be overwhelming. Okay. Could you please go to slide number 20? So what I suggest is when you first open the system outlog, what I normally do is to search for the first occurrence of the string caused by. This is typically the first place you find the actually meaningful exception information that you are really looking for. So when you're troubleshooting, you're opening the system outlog, just go maybe Control F and type in caused by and then find this information. The screen capture talks about null pointer exceptions. Seems like you got null pointer exceptions when you invoked get credit score operation. So maybe you want to look at maybe the input parameter had a null field in it. And go to slide number 21. I'm going to talk more about cross-component trace, but if you have cross-component trace enabled, you will see SCA context in your log file. This, when you look at the operation name and where everything failed, it can be overwhelming because in reality, you are not the person who built the solution. You may have a whole different set of team that focus on the development of the SCA solution, and you're not the person who built the solution, and you are the system administrator trying to solve this issue. So by just looking at things like a get, credit score, operation name, it may not make sense to you, especially since usually interface whistles are shared common library. So there may be multiple components that share the same interface. So looking at those credit score, get credit score name, it might not make sense. But if you enable cross-component trace, it puts this information in the context of SCA. So it will tell you the interaction was going from credit agency export component trying to deliver the message to credit agency.component. Okay. So you can say, oh, okay, so this was in the credit agency SCA module. So I want to look at this module and look for the credit agency component. Okay, so instead of trying to figure out where this get credit score operation coming from, enable cross-component trace, and you know which module you want to look at. Go to slide 22. If you have WebSphere Integration Developer, there is server logs view. You, of course, you can look at the log file in opening in the text editor, but it can be overwhelming. So if you have server logs view, load the system log, and it puts into a nice format so that it's easier for you to trace the log information. And you can filter it through. You might say, I just want to look at the error contents in a log file. Don't show me everything or whatnot. So it's a nice feature to have just for your information. And go to slide 23. And so this is pretty straightforward, but there is a error message code. So I stands for informational, W stands for warning, A for audit message. It's actually supposed to be highlighting O, but O for system out message written by the SCA components, or maybe your Java snippet has system.out.println. Okay. So go to slide 24. So let's talk about cross-component trace. When you enable cross-component trace, you will see all the outputs embedded in the system.out.log file and trace log file. So it's not something that you have to go dig out additional files. So you just enable cross-component trace and you will see the results. Cross-component trace, what it does is to trace the record, well, trace the event flow through SCA component to SCA component. So you have better visibility of the data flow. It supports all the SCA call patterns supported by SCA specification. It supports synchronous call and three different flavors of asynchronous invocation. If you remember, asynchronous one-way, asynchronous with callback, asynchronous with deferred response. And, of course, it understands the business object based on SDO specification. And, of course, it knows the simple data types, such as string or integer. It supports ND environment, which is typically what we have, right? So network deployment environment. It can load files from each server. And also, the cross-component trace has a nice integration with the test client in the WebSphere Integration Developer. I'll have a slide to show you a little bit later and see how everything works together. So let's go to slide 25. So cross-component trace will support the detail microflow and also long-running business processes. Personally, what I find really useful is when I'm trying to troubleshoot long-running business processes. I almost always enable cross-component trace and trying to see what happened during the invocation of long-running business processes. Cross-component trace will follow the flow of the data from people activity to activity. It supports multiple receive and receive choice activities, and it will follow the internal thread work as well. And again, all these, I will show you screen capture so you know exactly what I mean by that. It supports HTTP, JMS, MQ, and MQ over JMS bindings. So it is another step towards end-to-end call chains. For instance, if you have JMS binding, if you remember, there is a function selector and data binding property that you set. This is, you know, something could wrong. When something could go wrong with JMS binding, typically it may be something to do with function selector and data binding. So it can capture, cross-component trace can capture work done as a part of export. And it knows how to support the rolling logs. You know that each system out log and trace log has to be, can be only so much in a size. And it starts rolling over to a new file. So cross-component trace can still put together all those split it log files and just trace the whole chain, not the data. And go to slide number 26. So let's talk about how to enable cross-component trace. At runtime, go to admin console and select troubleshooting and select cross-component trace and select the server that you wish to enable cross-component trace. And then you click on the checkbox for enable cross-component trace. Again, so you can set this cross-component trace on the configuration tab or runtime. Okay, and cross-component settings needs to be set for each server that you want to trace information on. And go to slide number 27. If you are still in the development phase, you can also enable cross-component trace through the test client in the WebSphere Integration Developer. Go to server logs view, and there's a little arrow, and click on the arrow, select cross-component trace state, and by default, it's disabled. You can enable. And also, there is an option to enable cross-component trace with data snapshot. What it means by this is that you know the data is flowing through component to component. Maybe the data you are dealing with is customer data about customer gender, his account ID, whatnot. So you might want to capture this data instance as a part of cross-component trace. So you know that if data starts having an expected value between component to component, this data snapshot information can be very handy. So if you want to capture data snapshot, you want to select this option. Go to slide number 28. So here is the screen capture of how everything integrated between the cross-component trace and the WebSphere Integration Developer other views. Once you start having this trace information in the server logs view, you might say, okay, so I want to look at which component this is. You can right-click on the entry and select Show Component in Assembly Diagram. If you select this, it'll load the assembly diagram that's corresponding to this particular entry and highlight the component that this entry is talking about. So again, so what IBM is trying to do is that the role is different between the developer and administrator. So as an administrator, you may not necessarily know by looking at the component name where it's coming from. So just simply right-click on the show component in assembly diagram. The tool would just bring up and takes you where this component is on the assembly diagram. So you don't have to know it all. Okay, just have the tools take you there. Go to slide number 29. If you are testing the components in the test client in the WebSphere Integration Developer, there's an events view, events flow view, and output in a server logs view. Go to slide 30. So events view will tell you how the service invocation took place during this particular testing. Okay. And then you might say, okay, so invoke hello world export, start hello world process was invoked. I want to know the corresponding server log entry for this, and you can right-click on that from the test client itself and select Show in Server Logs view. Go to slide 31, and it'll take straight to the server logs view and take you to the entry in the server log view. So I highlighted the portion says threat ID. So this is what I was talking about. You can see the threat ID associated with each activity. So you know which components run on the same thread, which ones are not. Okay, so this information can be really handy. And go to slide 32. For each entry, if you want to see the detail, double-click on that entry. It'll bring up the property dialog, and that's where this is where you can see the information about the timestamp of this particular log entry and thread ID and the full information. Again, if you enable cross-component trace with data snapshots, the property dialog box will show you the data snapshot as well. Please go to the next slide. So I know I'm going pretty quickly because there are so much that I want to cover and show it to you, and I want to still leave some time for you to ask questions. And so if you don't have WebSphere Integration Developer, then you have to look at the system outlog using the text editor, right? And in the system outlog, you will see XCT, stands for cross-component trace. This is the visual clue that this is where the cross-component trace entry begins. So typically, it starts with begin and also ends. And again, when you're using cross-component trace, it would be really nice if you have tools such as Server Logs Viewer to look at the entry. And also, this is just a portion of the entry that you can find in the log file. But remember, in a previous slide, I showed you the SCA context. So that's another place that you can see information about the data flow. Okay. And go to slide number 34. So, and another feature that we have that you can take advantage of is IBM Support Assistant, ISA. ISA is a free downloadable tool. Go to IBM Support website and download it for free. ISA, what it does is, it's not really specific to WebSphere. ISA is for any IBM software that we provide. What you're going to do is to download the IBM Support Assistant Workbench, and you install plugin for the specific IBM software that you're using. And so it has nice feature called Guided Troubleshooter. It helps you step-by-step in trying to troubleshoot a particular runtime issues. If you have ISA installed and go to Analyze Problem, and there's a Guided Troubleshooter tab, here you can start using this feature and trying to get the instruction on how to troubleshoot information. And go to slide 35. So here, once you're in Guided Troubleshooter, you can select the radio button for Guide Me Through Identifying My Symptom and Failing Components. And click on Next. It'll bring up another question saying that select action to take. You can select, I want to search for a solution using a particular error message that you are looking at, okay, or exception, okay, and click on next. Then it will take you to the next page and go to slide number 36. And for example, in this particular screen capture, I'm having out-of-memory error. So you select the information, and then what the Guided Troubleshooter will give you is a step-by-step instruction of how to approach this information. If you can see in the screen capture, it will tell you, okay, well, first of all, go open the log file and grateful out of memory issue, whatnot. So depends on the selection you make, it'll provide you with different set of questions to answer. And in the end, it will give you either a list of documentation that you can refer to or specific instructional steps that you can follow as shown in this screenshot. Okay, so it's really useful. This ISA, its main purpose is to help you trying to help yourself, trying to troubleshoot on your own before contacting IBM support. I think that will be go to the next slide, slide 37. So I know I just browsed through very quickly because there's so much I wanted to talk about, but I only have so much time. So I know I cover many topics very quickly, but we talked about problem determination. Again, having quick checklists, as I showed you earlier, it will really help you organize your thoughts when you're at the heat of the moment trying to troubleshoot an issue. Again, if you have some sort of plan to provide temporal solution for your client applications, that also give you more time to find a permanent solution. We talked about SCA exceptions. Key information to remember is that SCA service business exception is something that clients should handle using some sort of fault handler. So fail events that you see in a fail event manager really associate with service runtime exception that was triggered between the asynchronous invocation. SCA problem determination tools, I talked about cross-component trace in WebSphere process server and WebSphere integration developer. And also I talked about guided troubleshooter in ISA. So there are a lot more to talk about, but WebSphere education team, they offer WebSphere process server problem determination class, which is 5 days long. So it might throw you off, but what really is that this class used to require was problem determination as a prerequisite, but we decided to combine those two classes because was problem determination techniques is really crucial for troubleshooting WebSphere process server environments. So we combine those classes together, so it's 5 days in length, but we do offer self-paced version of this class. So if you cannot attend 5 days long class, you can just go through the downloadable self-paced training. If you decide to do so, you'll be listening to me because I did the recordings of the class. But anyway, so I'll return it back to you, Joseph.
Thank you, Yoko, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Kathleen, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And we do have questions coming through. One moment. First question is coming from Anne Wong. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Anne Wong from Aurora. I have a question about the cross-component trace.
Yes.
What the component here means, say, if I have my application running on my server and I have web service to talk to a third-party server, and the request come back, the response come back from the third-party server very slow, is the cross-component trace can trace the response detail from third-party server?
Okay, good question. So cross-component trace is really meant to trace the service call between the service component to components within your solution. So when you have invoke external service which is outside of process server, then it cannot capture what's going on. However, you will still be able to do the data snapshot. So you cannot really look into what happened on the edge component, but you will know, you can see the response message that came back. So in a way, if you really want to see the problem between the SOAP over HTTP, then you have to use other feature that coming with the with something like a TCP/IP monitor. But using cross-component trace, you do have a capability to see the data that came back as a response.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Good question.
The next question is coming from AJ Aronoff. Your line is open.
Thank you. Could you repeat the name of the 5-day process server WebSphere debugging course?
Sure. It is IBM WebSphere Process Server Version 7 Problem Determination. And the course code is WB725.
WB725.
And WB725 is the instructor-led class. If you are interested in self-paced, it's Z as zebra, B725.
Thank you. Andrew Washburn, your line is open.
Yes, I had a question about the asynchronous, whether it's asynchronous deferred or with callback and all of that. Is that just if you're using the programming model? Like, what if you're wiring a long-running BPL to another long-running BPL, and you select as your one of your qualifiers is asynchronous? How do you know which flavor of asynchronous it's using?
Okay, so if you are typically, if you are, for instance, okay, let me try to organize my thoughts. So asynchronous, let's focus on the long-running business processes or any component. By nature, long-running business process, it use asynchronous with, I believe it's asynchronous with callback. And so what it happens is the generated underneath the code, so your signature interface is actually request response.
Right, assuming you have a two-way, right? That you have a response part of your whistle. Okay.
Right, but it's using asynchronous.
Okay.
So it's the request goes out asynchronously, response coming back asynchronously. So underneath the cover, the runtime has to implement certain mechanism to keep track of the message, request message out, and it has a message ID, and it has to, when the message comes, response coming back from external service, it has to correlate the original requester instance. So it's not something you have to do. It's runtime does it automatically for you. So when you implement the solution, you will see all the Java code generated, and eventually you will deploy as an EO file.
Right.
So underneath the cover, it's using the long-running business process. It's using asynchronous with callback. So it has to implement. I don't have a slide in this presentation, but internally it has to provide get response operation or something like that. So
okay.
So that's what's pulling the data. And again, it's not something that you have to do, but it's something that the tools will generate it for you when you implement the solution using the visual components in a lid.
And is it possible, based on other qualifiers you said, that it chooses to use async deferred instead of callback, or that's just totally up to the runtime at that point?
No, if you do, you can do so, but it's not going to be BPL. If you have, for instance, if you have an SCA component, which is POJO.
Right.
Then you can do so, and you have to implement the particular operation to support asynchronous with defer response or asynchronous with callback.
It's meaning through the programming model itself,
right?
Not through wiring of the component or something like that.
Right, exactly. Right. It's in order to use that, you have to provide the operation and implement the method.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Thank you.
The next question is coming from Alexander Russell. Your line is open.
My question is, can the cross-component trace also be enabled runtime basically through the WebSphere admin console, or does it have to be enabled through the integration developer?
No, I actually had a slide. So yes, you can enable cross-component trace from runtime. There is, in the admin console, select troubleshooting, and there's a cross-component trace, and then you can Just like any other property on server, you have configuration tab and runtime tab. And for a particular server that you want to enable cross-component trace, you can, maybe you want to do runtime tab, because cross-component trace, especially if you set the enable cross-component trace with data snapshots, you know, think about the impact on the runtime performance, right? You're generating additional tracing information, so you might want to go to runtime tab and enable cross-component trace. So,
okay. Yeah, and is it actually then best to analyze it afterwards using, you mentioned the Tivoli Log Viewer, or can I also, for example, use, instead of which, use the Rational Application Developer that comes with WebSphere Application Server to trace the cross-component trace?
The best tool is the Server Logs Viewer in the WebSphere Integration Developer. But if you don't have that option, I had a slide, I forgot the slide number, but for instance, if you don't have any other tools, I don't think the log analyzer that we have through ISA, I don't think it can analyze the cross-component trace output nicely. The best tool is SWID. But if not, like I show you in the screen capture, in the log file, just open it in the text editor and search for SCA context entry.
Okay.
Yeah.
That way it's easy to identify. Yeah, because the reason I'm asking is usually when you're a system administrator, you don't have the developer tools such as the integration developer available to
right.
you. That's usually something that only developers have installed on their workstations.
Right.
But you need to troubleshoot as an admin, so that's just wondering if you can use other tools. But that's fine. I mean, it's visible in logs, so you can take something from that.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Yeah, hopefully in the future, next release, we will have nice, you know, tools within the admin console. That would be nice to have.
That would be very nice, yeah. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We have no further questions at this time.
At this point in time, we will conclude the webcast.